We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Today we open the phone lines for questions about computers. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month. Debbie Flieger and Jim Irick of CITES are with us this month. CITES, the acronym for the University of Illinois' Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. Jim is a wireless network designer at CITES. Debbie is a network engineer at CITES. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Jim, Debbie, thanks for coming in. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you, too.
Nice to see you.
And we have a caller already waiting for us on line one in Champaign County. Good morning.
Good morning, all. My question, well, last year I invested in a new PC. It had a Windows 7 operating system. And I get the Microsoft updates automatically. But I wonder, is the Microsoft Security Essentials installed on that system, or do I need to install it?
I believe you need to install it. I know on the Windows 7 machine I built for myself, just from the using the Microsoft Windows 7 install CD, Security Essentials was not included.
Okay, and how do I do that?
Just go to your favorite search engine and search for Microsoft Security Essentials.
Okay.
And you'll get a link to a Microsoft page with the big green button, I believe, in the middle that says download.
Okay. So Microsoft Security Essentials, if I search for?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Super. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line two. Hello.
Hey, you're doing great today. Just moving along.
Okay, well, what can we help you with?
Yeah, let's make it quick. I'm looking at a new computer, and, you know, whether a Mac or Apple or whatever. I have trouble with a lot of eye strain and stuff. Are there any new screens or things that will be coming along the way that's a little bit easier? Or not?
The problem that fixed it for me were glasses to wear only when I'm using a computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do wear I do wear glasses too. I'm older, so in terms of seeing it, but I still get it. You know, so I know that you're supposed to look away every so minutes, you know, many minutes, and all that kind of stuff, but it sort of becomes difficult.
You could play around with the contrast and the brightness, especially the brightness.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways I found to reduce my own eye strain is that, not only do I have glasses, that I went to the eye doctor and said, okay, I stare at a computer monitor 12 hours a day. I need something for this. And he had a different test than normal to come up with that, is I work in my office with no overhead lighting. I have indirect lighting under my desk. And then I'm able to have the brightness on my LCD monitor very low. And that seems to help a lot.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest problem is the overhead lighting, too, at times when you're at places.
Sure.
Yeah. So, okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana, line three. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yes. Back to the Microsoft Security Essentials. Have you had a chance to evaluate it, and how would it compare with McAfee?
Well, I use it. I mean, Security Essentials is what's installed on my desktop and several of my family's computers that I help maintain. I have not gone through any rigorous test of, okay, this USB key has a virus on it. Let's see which one picks them up or anything. For me, I've personally found Security Essentials to be more user-friendly than McAfee. But otherwise, as far as technically how good it detects problems, I have not spent any time with that.
Does it work with your browser to warn you of unsafe sites?
I believe that Internet Explorer has some of that stuff built in, as opposed to being part of the antivirus package.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that it adds in anything extra at that point.
I use Firefox rather than internet.
And Firefox has some of that stuff built in too, especially the newer versions.
McAfee has a warning system that is compatible with version 3. Whatever, but not with the beta version. And I was wondering if there, the thing I didn't like about Firefox, I assume it is actually doing the work, but it doesn't give you any feedback. Unless, I suppose, you actually got to something that was malevolent.
Right, and I've certainly seen that, where it'll come up and give you messages and say, warning, this site's doing something funny in the background.
Yeah.
For me, I prefer the minimalist approach. I don't really like, I've had other antiviruses, AVG, and other ones that have toolbars. I'm not a big toolbar person, so the fewer toolbars at the top of my browser, the happier I am.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's not been an issue. For other people, maybe they want to give it a go and try something that has more of an active toolbar for watching what you're surfing. And there are several, not only McAfee, I'm guessing that Symantec, and I know that AVG also has that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. This is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn, and today Jim Eyrick and Debbie Flieger of Sites are with us to take your telephone calls and emails about computers. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, will-talk at illinois.edu. And a flurry of calls there to start off. Now things are quiet. Thinking about safe sites, what about determining safe apps?
For your phone or your...
For your phone or for your tablet?
I know that's kind of scary given the news that just this week Google removed 20-some apps from its Android market because they were doing bad things in the background. I think that Apple, I would give the check mark to the Apple column for probably doing a better job at certifying applications to not do bad things. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly stay away. I guess stay away. If it's a commercial product that you should be paying for and some sites like download it here free, that's a warning sign right there. Not only is it probably illegal, even if it is completely legitimate copy, but there's a chance that it's not, and that's just the bait to get you there so they can infect your machine.
Okay. I think we're going to take another call now. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Good morning. I have kind of a difficult problem here. It's an intermittent one. First of all, it's due to a hobby of mine, which is digitizing my old analog recording collection. And doing that, I have a custom-built Windows 7 model done for me by Computer Deli, and it's a quad 4 AMD processor. And what I did was move my SoundBlaster Audigy 2ZS Platinum Pro sound card from my previous machine, but they have the updated drivers on that. But the problem is that occasionally I get stuttering recordings. In other words, it might be recording normally for about 40 microseconds, and then it'll be dead silence, 10 microseconds. That varies. And that seems to come and go randomly. I could stop recording and start again. It'll be normal, or it could start stuttering after I've had a normal recording. And what I'm using is Audacity Sound Editor.
I would start with looking at what's running in the background of your machine. Antivirus, anti-spyware, any type of system that says it's making your computer more efficient, or any automatic backup programs, and see if something is using up the hard drive or spiking the CPU while you're doing recordings. Some of that you could do by going to the task manager, so control, delete, and then select the task manager, and watching what applications are running in the background and how much CPU speed they're using. You can also, from the task manager, look at CPU usage for each one of your CPU. So if you have a quad core, there should be four. It'll show you a little graph of how much of that CPU is actually being utilized, and to see if while you're recording those graphs are spiking to the top, meaning that the machine's running out of processing power And obviously, recording off of analog is in real time. So then if we're running out of processing power, we're going to get little something's got to give.
I have done that already, and it never goes over about 30% on one core. But the rest of them are even lower. Now, sometimes it works better when I switch the thing over to Windows Direct Sound, but then other side for the recording input, and other times it works better with the MMD, I think it is.
And I'm not familiar enough with the internals of Windows Sound anymore. I'm afraid that was my first guess was about all I had for this one. I would try possibly, I'm sure there's a whole lot of people on the internet that are doing analog to digital. So I would start by going to some of the forums or Googling to see if anybody else has run into this and any steps that they ran into, and perhaps specifically searching on about your particular audio card. One more suggestion would be most motherboards have a built-in sound card. Is it possible for you to switch to the built-in sound card? Maybe it. I understand that you have the Creative because it's a higher quality device, but perhaps just for testing to plug into the motherboard sound card and see if you run into the same problem.
Okay, well, I haven't tried that one yet. Thank you.
You may have to enable the sound card in the BIOS, because if I was building a machine and somebody said they were going to put a sound card in it, I would probably disable that the one on the motherboard so it didn't cause any problems with the add-in.
I can do that with the control panel, can I?
It depends. If it's actually, because some of that stuff can actually be disabled through the BIOS that runs right at when the computer starts up. So then Windows actually, if it's disabled on the motherboard's BIOS, Windows may actually never see it. It depends. Maybe it's in the control panel, or maybe you'll have to look at the BIOS. The best bet would be to look in the manual for the motherboard.
All right. Thank you.
And we welcome other calls, other questions for our guests, Jim Irick and Debbie Flieger, this morning about computers. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, and the email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, Debbie, Steve Jobs introduced second-generation iPad yesterday. How different is it from the first?
It's a lot smaller. It's skinnier. It's lighter. It should be a lot faster, but still get the same battery life, which is always, sometimes when they go faster, you get less battery life. So it's supposed to. It still doesn't have an SD card slot. It still doesn't have USB connectivity to, connect to external drives or other things. Those were things a lot of people would like. It looks nice, but a friend of mine mailed me after I said, "Oh, I got one," last time I was on, and said, "So if I've got a notebook and I've got a smartphone, what do I need one?" And kind of the answer is, if you like your notebook and your smartphone, you don't. They're fun, but they're just fun. Now, I do know some people that have replaced their notebooks with them, who have a desktop system. So smaller and lighter, the screen's the same, cameras, two new cameras, high HD camera on the back for taking high-quality pictures, and a forward-facing camera, not so high-quality, but can do the new the FaceTime software, so the video chat with other people who have a Mac or who have an iPhone.
Yeah.
And that's most of it.
Yeah. What happens to the first generation now that's still out there? Does the price come down?
I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. They did have the exact same memory configurations at the exact same prices. So a 16 gig with Wi-Fi only, still $499, even on the new. That's going to be, anybody want an old old one with a new one? That, so I can go buy a new one. But
And Apple's practice tends to be that any stocks left over of the previous generation, they do start knocking the price down. So we'll see. I mean, they certainly have done that with the iPhones and the iPod touches and stuff. So perhaps that's what we'll see with this.
Yeah. What about other tablets that are out there or are coming? Have you had a chance to look at Zoom?
We're ordering one soon to test with Campus Wireless and the applications that we support for Campus. We don't have it yet. So soon we should have one of those. I haven't looked at any of the other ones lately either.
Yeah. It seems that for several months, at the end of 2010 and now at the beginning of 2011, this is the year of the tablet. So I suppose we will continue to see rollouts of other devices as the weeks and months roll on.
Certainly.
This is Focus, and we're talking about computers this morning with Jim Irick and Debbie Flieger. They are with CITES. That is the acronym for the University of Illinois' Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. Jim is a wireless network designer. Debbie is a network engineer. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, the great thing about these smartphones and tablets is they're so portable, and we can take them with us anywhere, just about. It's also easy to lose them or to look away and have them stolen. Would you talk about lock devices and security precautions that we might take to keep that stuff secure?
Well, with phones, I don't really know of any other than actually, you know, keeping it with you and holding on to it. It's not like a computer where you got lockdown cables.
Well, I mean, you could use a screen lock, which certainly would help. So every time you pick it up, you have to enter a four-digit code or something. Yeah, certainly keeping a hold of it, I don't think is, you know, like you have the Kingston lock adapter on almost every computer device. No phones have that. But there are other ways. I don't know if Google does it. I know Apple does this for their mobile devices through the Mobile Me, and then the Exchange server, Microsoft Exchange server, like the one that Campus has, supports remote wipe. So if your device is misplaced or stolen, you can log into a website and say, erase my entire phone. And then as soon as that phone it has network connectivity, either through a cellular network or it gets on a Wi-Fi network, then it'll get a message from the server that says, okay, you're reported that you're in bad hands right now. Erase everything. So
have a backup.
Yeah.
Be sure you're
well, and that's hopefully, I mean, if you have it on a mobile service, you should have a backup. I mean, that's part of what those are for, Mobile Me and things, right?
No, Mobile Me doesn't back
okay.
up your iPhone.
Well, Exchange would back up, keeps your email and keeps stuff like that. But right, with an iPhone, you do need to plug it in once in a while so it backs up. Otherwise, you're going to lose every app that you've installed. Mm-hmm. You'll have to do it from memory or go through all your receipts from the iTunes store, right?
Well, iTunes remembers what you've bought. Well, and it lets you put it on any device you own. So you just plug if you get it back or you get a new phone, you plug it in, you'll be able to put all – it just shows you a list of what you've bought. There's a purchase section.
So you'd have to pick them, though. You wouldn't remember which ones you'd taken off and which ones you'd added, I suspect.
Yeah, you have to do a little bit of playing with it.
But at least people wouldn't be able to get into your calendar or your phone book. You still need to call the phone company and get your device deactivated. Otherwise, people can make – I suspect mm-hmm. should be able to make – will be making long-distance phone calls. Computers can have – I think there are some remote wipe stuff that you can buy for laptops.
I know there's some remote tracking stuff. There was a package out that the guy had originally called it MacLogic, and he had to rename it for trademark reasons. And somebody bought it as a service, and it's something you install on a Mac. And if you report it as stolen, it starts taking pictures of whoever's using it and recording its IP address and things like that and sending it to the database that the central server maintains. Basically, it's similar to the wipe, except it doesn't wipe your. It just starts sending you tracking information so you can try and find it. But for the phone, real quick, MobileMe is a fairly expensive package. A lot of people don't have it. With the last version of the iPhone OS, they did now offer a extremely reduced MobileMe account that will just let you wipe your phone for free, so that you don't have to pay $99 a year to have the full blown MobileMe to just be able to wipe your phone.
Is that still MobileMe, or is it called something else?
MobileMe. It used to be Mac.com, and now it's MobileMe.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, let's take another call. This is a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm just calling. It's a simple question. I have an older PC, and I don't have a utilities on it right now for spyware or viruses. And I'm wondering if one is better than the other. Like, the only two I know about is Cyber Defender and Norton's Utilities. I was hoping there was a free one, but...
Well, let's start with what operating system are you using?
XP.
Okay. So my recommendation right now, and this is... I just recently installed this on a family machine Tuesday, is to use Microsoft Security Essentials. That is a free package from Microsoft that is anti-spyware and antivirus.
Microsoft Security...
Essentials.
Okay, how do I find it?
So if you just go to a browser and go to a search engine and type Microsoft Security Essentials, you'll get to the there'll be a link there that takes you to the page. And I was wrong, it's a blue button, not green. That says download. It's very clear right in the middle of the screen to download the one. And then I think for some machines it'll say, what operating system do you have? So a little box will pop up and you'll say, well, I have Windows XP.
Okay. My computer, ever since I put on the Cyber Defender, they have a free thing that's really a prelude to buying the system. And I didn't buy the system at this point. And it has slowed down everything, and I can't get it off. Because every time I turn my machine on, it pops up. And then when I try to just, you know, click it, the X, and get it off, it, I don't know what you call it, but it just goes dead. You know, it stops.
So to remove it, you'll need to go into the control panel.
Right. I've tried that.
Okay. The best bet's probably going to be to search some of the places. And I've actually done some I just went to how to remove Cyber Defender, and there's some links through Google to help you get rid of it.
Okay, so on Google, just put in Cyber Defender.
I would put in how to remove Cyber Defender. And then,
okay.
And there's some links to various people saying how they got rid of it.
All right. And, I mean, that's reasonable to assume that it's, like, slowing down and messing things up a bit.
Certainly, I have run into my share of utilities that are supposedly supposed to help your computer that have caused way more problems and performance issues than they have ever helped, which is why I actually don't recommend most overall system utilities and registry cleanup tools and things like that, because I spent more time fixing customers' computers after they've used one of those tools than if they had just called me to begin with.
Okay, well, I'm glad I called you then before I put one on. One more quick question. My Internet Explorer has never really worked right. If I reinstalled it, if I took the old one off and reinstalled that, is there a chance it would work better?
Windows XP came with Internet Explorer. I don't believe there's a way for you to actually remove it and reinstall it. You could start by making sure that you have Windows updates and you have all the newest security patches, including Windows XP Service Pack 3 installed, which may replace some of the Internet Explorer files. Otherwise,
what's it called?
Windows XP Service Pack 3. It'll be listed when you do Windows updates. It'll
Pack 3.
And that's the newest service pack for XP. But don't be afraid to just go download Firefox and use an alternative browser if you can't get.
Well, I've been using Google Chrome, but not. It doesn't work for everything. I'm finding out.
Right, and you'll find that Firefox is a bit more compatible with sites on the internet than Chrome is currently. That's been my experience anyway.
Okay.
I don't know if Debbie spent any time with using Chrome at all. I think she's mostly a Safari person on Macs.
Yeah, mostly Safari.
Yeah, I'm so wishing I had gone with Mac in the first place. I do have Firefox. I just I guess I just don't know how to use it very well.
And then just make sure that you have it up to date also.
Okay. Yeah, I try to keep the updates, but you know, current. But sometimes I have to admit I don't do it, you know, right at the minute. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Good luck. And next we go to Southern Indiana, a listener on line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes. I'm going to buy a laptop for the first time, and I'm going to use it basically for agricultural, you know, programs and such. So I'll be taking it, you know, outside a little bit, but I really don't want a military, one of those really, you know, waterproof, shockproof things. I don't think I need that, but what I was really wanting to know is the kind of laptop would you know, what you think is a good one and what's the minimum requirements. I want it to last at least 5 years.
That's tough on a laptop.
Yeah,
laptops 5 years old is pushing it, especially one that gets moved around. They just get loose. The screen starts to not stay up. It's been very difficult for me to keep a laptop that lasts that long. For me, desktops, 5 years, no problem. Laptops are closer to 3, in my opinion, before you're going to find that you may want to you want another one. The other reason is that it comes up to the point where you're going to have to where you have to buy another battery because the old battery has gone bad, and you're like, man, $200 for new battery, or I can just spend another $600 or $700 for new laptop. So the big one I think I would recommend to you is to make sure that it has an outdoor readable display.
Okay.
I suspect that that's going to be an important thing that you're going to wish you had if you don't.
Yeah.
Now, so you basically you don't want the military one, so the Panasonic Toughbooks are out of the question, I think. You could, you might want to investigate, and I'm sorry I'm not familiar with every laptop manufacturer's line. I am familiar with the Dell ATG laptops, and those definitely have the option at least for an outdoor readable display. And those are, they have extra bumpers on them, so a little bit of extra plastic around the edge, and they're a little bit tougher chassis than a standard laptop. So you might investigate those, and perhaps I don't know, perhaps Sony and Toshiba and the other ones have comparable models. I'm just not familiar with them, but I think outdoor readable display would be one of the big ones you'll want to look. You'll want to make sure you get.
And what's the minimum requirements like as far as the speed of the processor and the storage and all that? I mean, whenever I go to ask them, I mean, I really am not too familiar with this stuff.
Part of that is that I think that you're going to have to go buy, I mean, you're going to be buying probably some turnkey ag programs from one of the dealers, I suspect.
Yes.
Then you probably want to go with their recommendation of what they want you to have for memory and processor and screen size and hard drive space.
Okay.
I don't think that you can actually get an underpowered Dell ATG, and I suspect that's going to be the case for a lot of the ruggedized laptops, is that they don't really mess around with making them really cheap, which means that they're not going to be really underpowered.
Okay. That's my biggest concern. You know, spend that kind of money and didn't have enough capacity to do what I want to do.
Sure. But I think that I would guess that the software people that are the vendor that you're going to get your software from probably have some pretty good recommendations on that.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
And thanks for the call this morning. Other phone calls are invited. This is Focus. We're talking about computers today. No one waiting at the moment. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. My name is Celeste Quinn, and our guests this morning are Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick of Sites at the University of Illinois. I wanted to ask a couple of questions about backing up data and using the so-called cloud. What are the advantages? Are there disadvantages? Are there different providers? And how do you sort through that?
Well, that's a huge question.
Okay. Well, pick it apart.
For personal stuff, I don't think there's quite as many options. For big companies, I think there's a lot more choices and a lot of things. One of the things I've been curious about is, you know, what's the security like? You know, how good is the company? If I put all my stuff up there and depend on it, is it going to be there in 6 months or 12 months or 2 years? And I'm not sure anybody's got really good answers to some of those questions yet. The companies promise some nice things about security and that they're going to be there, but companies come and go. One of the ones I'm familiar with is called Dropbox. You know, for your personal data, you log in. You can get 2 gigabytes of storage for free, and then after that, if you want more than that, you pay. But you can have links on your computer and on your iPhone and on your Android phone and on your iPad and probably lots of other things, all to the same space. So when you put something up in one, you get it in all the places at the same time. Other than the fact it's free and it seems to work when I put a test file up there, I don't know much more about it. I know people have been using it for a few months now, and people have said a lot of good things about it. Jim?
I have an account, but I've never actually put a file on Dropbox, and I haven't really investigated any other ones. I've always had my own servers and stuff, so when I needed to pass files around, I could do it on my own stuff, or I use a USB key a lot. That's the biggest one for me, is just a big 16 gig USB key. As far as, you know, anything else in the cloud, we did hear that, Google accidentally deleted 40,000 Gmail accounts this week or last week, and they're working on restoring it. Again, for personal things, I think those are fine. For enterprise, you really have to step back and think about it. And I and before you use something like Dropbox, if you're looking at file stuff, or cloud-based services for your work, you should definitely talk to whoever is over IT security or in the IT department about what the policy is on that. Because of, I know on the university, this actually came up recently in a mailing list. There are definitely some concerns on the university regarding if people move files into a service like this, because those files may be related to a grant that has certain security requirements. And so if there's any questions, people should always call the site's help desk or contact site security or the CIO's office to ask about those before they go forward with using a cloud service for any university business. But really, you should any business.
Any business, yeah.
If you don't own it, you should probably ask somebody else before you use a cloud service for your work.
Okay. Let's take some more calls. Next, we go to Bloomington, line one. Hi.
Hi, I have a laptop that's about 3 years old, and lately I've noticed that it, when I turn it on, boot it up, it makes a much more audible click, click, grind, grind, crunch, crunch noise than it did when it was new. Does that mean that the hard drive is about to go?
Without actually hearing the noise, it's hard to say whether it's a CD-ROM drive or a hard drive or possibly even a fan. I suspect that it's not a fan by the way you describe it. But certainly, it's a possibility that your hard drive is developing bad sectors, and that noise is the hard drive resetting itself while it tries to seek that sector. That it could be the sound of impending doom.
Should I take it in where I bought it and have someone look at it, or is it just normal aging that means?
It's not a normal sound. That's not something that like I said, that's not something that should occur unless things are going downhill. So you definitely either, first of all, back up your data. Either get another hard drive or go get a big USB key, USB attached to it, the laptop, and back up anything you have important on that laptop. You should be doing that anyway, probably. So even if it turns out this isn't a hard drive problem, you can still feel good that you have a backup off that machine. But then certainly I would have take it to somewhere to have at least get an estimate, or have them just say, hey, listen to this noise it's making, and let them diagnose what the issue is and then give you an estimate on what it'll take to replace a drive, or if it's something else to fix it.
Okay.
If it gets into the part where it's internal components like fans and things, laptops are notoriously hard to take apart and get back together well, in my opinion. And it gets expensive. So if it's actually something that they have to take a lot of the laptop apart for, you might want to consider money better spent on another laptop.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think what you're saying is that if I'm going to spend $200 or $300, I ought to just go ahead and buy a new laptop since this one is 3 years old.
You know, it gets to the point where exactly. Because you can get some home, you know, like I said, not super power business laptops, but nice machines to use at home for $500, $600 now. So, right, if the repair is going to be $200 or $300, I think the money's better spent on another laptop. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Next, we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Good morning. I had a question. I got a Windows XP, and I always was able to play DVD movies on it. And all of a sudden, I'm not able to play DVD movies anymore. And I found out that when I put one in, I'd get a notice, you know, in a small box that says, this computer doesn't have a DVD code installed, and something like that. So what do you suppose is the problem?
Well, there were some pay programs that, by default, at least Windows XP, I believe, right, did not have all the right software and licenses without extra software, something like Cyber DVD Player, I think, or similar to that, to run. I would try a tool on the software program from the internet called VLC.
Mm-hmm.
And let me do some quick searching here and see what we can find. Yeah, so it's www.videolan.org/VLC, and it's the VLC media player. I would give that a go and see if it takes care of your problem for you.
Oh, okay. So go to that website.
Yes. Yeah, VideoLAN organization, and then it's called the VLC media player.
Oh, I see. Okay, I just had one more question, too. The laptops, I was thinking about getting a new laptop, too. Now, how do those things run? They run on batteries, or do you plug them in? Or
Almost all laptops will have a built-in battery. And then it'll have an external charger that will let you run it when the battery's depleted and also charge the battery.
Oh, I see. And would I have to get another service provider, or could I use the current one that I'd be using on my desktop?
Are we talking about like home internet connection?
Yeah.
You would use the same one you have now. And if you have a home router set up, Then if you don't have a wireless router, you can get a wireless router, and then you could actually use the desktop and the PC at the same time.
If you've got an older system and the network connection is a card in your desktop PC, you might need a new router.
Right.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener in Kenosha. Line 4, hi.
Hey, good morning. I'm trying to do something. I got one of those new touchscreen all-in-one computers, and I'm trying to do my own little videos of what I do, and what I'm trying to find out is how can you do this reasonably and maybe not have to buy all this other extra equipment and try to, I guess what I'm trying to do is send something on YouTube and to get noticed. I have, you know, some ads maybe I can throw on Facebook or some other, or Twitter. I'm trying to do this with the least inexpensive way as possible. Is there a way to do that, or do you know?
I'm afraid on this is a PC, a Windows machine.
Yeah,
right.
Windows 7, I believe.
I'm afraid I don't actually know what I've not ever done video producing on Windows boxes, or even on Macs, but I know Macs have some stuff built in. I kind of familiar with the programs they use. So I don't actually know what software you would need for Windows 7. My suggestion would be to do some internet searching on Windows 7 video editing or composition and see what you come up with. I'm sure that there are some free utility. Even if you have to download something and it's not built into the operating system, I am positive that somewhere somebody's going to recommend a pretty open source video editing program that you'll be able to use. I'm just not familiar with them.
Well, it's got a video in a, you know, where you can take pictures and do your own videos in front of it because it's got the camera built in.
Okay.
And then you've got, you know, you could do the pictures and whatnot on there. And I've done it, and it has like a 10-minute segment, I think, or something. And you could send it out, like, on Facebook to other people. But, you know, I'm a contractor. I'm trying to figure out a way to do this where I can send. I do a lot of woodworking now. I started up a woodworking company, hence I'm trying to create jobs for everybody, and I'm trying to do this cheapest way possible, and it's just it seems like I'm running up a roadblock because you're telling me one. I'm listening to you talk about laptops. I've heard several different opinions and several different guys, and nobody ever, including yourself, are actually agreeing with, you know, one another on which laptop or what to go from. So it's kind of confusing. You know, I've talked to 5 people now, and they're all like, you know, it's going to cost you $10,000 or something. But anyway, maybe there's somebody out there that knows what the heck I'm talking about, and he'll get off and listen. You guys are always great, so thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call. Maybe there's somebody listening who's, you know, that's right up there.
Sure. And what about the, and I never remember their name, the media in the mall?
Media Center?
The Media Center.
Oh,
perhaps
Independent Media Center.
Perhaps they can assist with this.
Yeah. They have it's in Urbana, though, and listener called in from Kenosha today. So, but maybe they could take a phone call at the Independent Media Center.
Sure.
From somebody.
Or maybe we can get somebody to call in and give us a hint on this.
And we actually have someone on the staff who's really good at this, but he's not here today. So maybe next month. If our Kenosha caller might want to call back, and I'll have this fellow on standby, so he can because he's doing all kinds of things. in that direction. So let's take a call now from a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. When TVs went to digital, rather than get a digital tuner for my TV, I got a digital tuner for my PC, and it used to work. And then for a while, I only got WILL, and now it's telling me that I have no tuner card. But I looked inside, and indeed, there's a tuner card. Any clues?
With the PC off, pull the tuner card out and put it back in.
Okay.
It's called reseating it.
Oh, that makes sense.
You go to the manufacturer and download the newest drivers just to see. Otherwise, it's possible that the tuner card's actually damaged.
Right.
Not functional anymore. The fact that you're only getting a single station, which is an in-town station, it's perhaps that you actually have an antenna problem also. Now, that's not why it doesn't say, sorry, you don't have a tuner card.
Right.
But as it was, when you got to the point where you could only receive one station, it's certainly possible that there was also an external antenna issue.
Right. The odd thing was that I used to be able to get other stations, even digital stations, and then it went down to only one or two digital stations.
What kind of antenna do you have?
I can't identify it. It's got some kind of a disc on it.
But does it go outside the house, or is it in the house?
It's inside the house, and it plugs in.
Okay. I mean, it's possible that maybe a lightning surge came through the power to the antenna and then into the tuner card. It's a long shot.
Sure.
Otherwise, I would start by reseating it and then perhaps calling the manufacturer, contacting the manufacturers through their website of the tuner card.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the call. Digital tuner for a PC?
If you want to watch TV on your PC screen.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that such a thing existed.
They've actually had the analog ones for a long time, too. I've never been a fan because I don't like watching TV on a small monitor. So it's not something that I was ever interested in. But I know other people. Uh-huh. Actually, I had friends that were truck drivers, and they'd get tuner cards for their laptops because they didn't have cards. They didn't want to have a TV and a laptop in their truck, in their semi-truck. So they would get tuner cards, and then they'd be able to watch TV from their laptops on the road.
Yeah, that makes sense. Myself, I spend enough time in front of a screen that I want to be sitting farther back.
Well, I know some people, especially when digital was very early, it was hard. TVs didn't do it by themselves. You had your HD-ready TV, which is what I've got at home, and if you wanted to do HD, you had a PC sitting there to make the actual HD signals for your TV. And I don't know, and I didn't hear you say this, if you've never reseated a card before, turn the computer all the way off.
That's what
he
said.
Okay,
he did say, yeah.
Absolutely. Don't pull plugs in the inside of your computer. You shouldn't even open the case of a desktop PC without the power being unplugged, or at least off. And make sure you're
off
not in a place.
And unplugged.
Well,
unplugged.
Okay, so here's the issue on that.
Yeah.
Some people will tell you off and unplugged, which is safe. But some people will say off and plugged in. And the reason for that is so that the power cable is still discharging ground in case you have a static discharge.
Oh.
So I'm not going to tell you which way to go. I'm just saying there's two schools of thought out there.
Okay.
And static is important to be careful of anytime you've got a computer case open.
In general, if you're finding that you're walking around and you're zapping door handles and you're zapping the pet and the dog and, and things when you go to pet them, it's probably a bad time to open up your computer. Instead, you should go to the store and buy a humidifier.
Yeah, okay. This is Focus, and we're talking today about computers with Debbie Flagger and Jim Eyrich. My name is Celeste Quinn. We've got about 8 minutes left in this portion of the program. We could probably take one or two more calls this morning. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And before we run out of time, I wanted to tell folks that in the area, there is a countywide residential electronics collection coming up Saturday. So if you've got items that don't work anymore, or you don't want them, nobody wants them, this is a free residential drop-off of items such as televisions, computers, laptops, monitors, keyboards, mice, cables, zip drives, printers, and scanners. VCR, DVD players, mobile phones, fax machines, MP3 players, PDAs, video game consoles. There's a limit of 10 items per resident, and it's this Saturday, March 5th, from 8 to noon at the News Gazette Distribution Center, which is located in the Apollo Industrial Park, and that is at 3202 Apollo Drive, Champaign, 8 to noon this Saturday. Let's take another call now, a listener in Champaign. Line 1, hi.
Hi. I'm calling about online storage. I'm in the middle of a gigantic project that I'm afraid to lose any part of, and when I go out of town, I put a drive in there, and I give the stuff to my brother to watch, all this kind of stuff. But I had an online storage thing. I was not happy with them because they screwed up the accounting on it, and I could never reach a human being. So I'm looking for a new online, a web-based storage for a project. What do you recommend?
Well, it's not something I use. I can tell you a couple that are out there. Dropbox that I mentioned earlier.
I'm sorry?
Dropbox. I mentioned that earlier. I've seen very nice reviews of it. I've seen a lot of people saying good things about it, but I haven't used it personally.
Okay.
I don't think I've seen anything negative about it.
All right.
I'm trying to think of what else is out there.
And is this just for storage or as a backup means?
This is just for backup.
Okay. So there's also, again, and I haven't used any of these, there's Carbonite. I hear advertisements for on the radio.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
But you
don't know anything whether they've been well reviewed or anything.
Honestly, I don't. Your best friend here is going to be just a search engine, and put in, type in Carbonite and hit review.
Okay.
Or even bad review.
Okay.
And you'll be interested in what the differences are between those two things, I'm sure.
Okay.
Well,
I missed the first part of the show, so I didn't hear any discussion on the Dropbox, which you mentioned earlier.
Neither one of us have a great deal of experience with it. I have friends that have used it, but certainly they don't bet any. If it blew up and evaporated tomorrow, I don't believe that they would be too hurt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't actually know anybody that relies on those services. And, in fact, I certainly wouldn't rely on it as my only means of backup.
Okay.
Again, storage is so cheap as far as external USB storage, whether it be USB keys
mm-hmm.
or, now we're at, 2 and 3 terabyte external hard drives.
Right.
That that should be your primary backup.
Okay.
With an online one probably being your secondary.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks for your help.
You're very welcome. And we've got an email message from someone who can help our fellow out who was moving analog recordings to digital. One of the major causes of intermittently interrupted recording where a PC is concerned is automatically checking for the insertion of a CD in the drive. You can disable the auto check for CD presence option, and sometimes this will cure that particular problem. I don't remember exactly what the actual verbiage is, but so hope that helps.
Sounds good.
Okay. And let me check the inbox here. I got another email. Okay. Somebody is letting us know that it has been announced by Apple that the original iPad prices would be reduced by $100. So that's nice to know. And
there goes my resale value.
Yeah.
So for Dropbox, I have one other comment. I took a quick look at the few files I put on here. It actually has made copies of them local on my hard drive. So if you've got a friend that's doing backup watching for you, you could possibly get the Dropbox service and put your account on your computer and on their computer and have it automatically replicate the files down. You'd want to test it, but not only would it be in the cloud storage, but then it might also be on their computer in another house, so that you kind of have a two backup system. It would be worth testing, at least with the free version.
Okay. And another email. I've had some trouble downloading updated versions of software. It seems I need a special version, for my dual core computer, and for some reason they don't first ask if I'm dual core. I have no idea what that means.
That's not something I've ever run into. The dual core stuff is, as far as software versions go, on Windows at least, and certainly on Mac, it's just a magic thing that happens in the background. There are certainly programs that can take advantage of multi-core CPUs, and if you are running one of those programs, then the updates probably need to be aware of that. But as far as like Windows updates and other things, that's not true. That there's different ones for multi-core. There are different ones if you have 64-bit operating systems, because there's the Intel and the AMD, and there's been some past ones. So that can run. You can run into that. But as far as just single core or dual core, I have not seen where any just generic Windows updates need to recognize whether you have single or dual core.
Okay, very good. We've got one last call, but we're really stretched out here. So we're going to have to say sorry to our listener in Orland Park. Tune in next month, I guess, is the best thing I can say there. And I wanted to remind people again about the recycling event that's coming up Saturday in Champaign for electronics. More information on that, just put the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission into your browser and you'll get the details.
That's really nice about the monitors, because most places that you can take electronics to will charge you for monitors, and I don't think that that was mentioned on that sheet.
No.
So that's very cool that they'll take a monitor at no cost.
And this is just for residential people. This is not for businesses or institutions or anything, and it's there's a 10 item limit on that. So that's where we'll wrap it up for this month. Debbie, Jim, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.